Minister of Energy Buache Jakun has set up a new committee to be headed by the head of the Department of Chemical Engineering at the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology, Dr. Lawrence Dankwa, to review the entire operations of BOST. Such a review is also to come up with any further recommendations that may be required to prevent any future contamination of petroleum product at BOST. The new committee has 2 weeks to present its report to the minister. So far, 25 million liters of contaminated petroleum products have been sold between 2014 and 2016, according to the minister. Tonight, we examine this issue further, and joining us on the line is the acting chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Mines and Energy, a member of Parliament for Odotobri, Emmanuel Jemfi. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir.
Were you at the minister's news conference today?
Yes, I was there.
Were you not surprised that it appears whatever you said last week is what the minister said today?
Let me first greet our cherished listeners and wish them a very good evening. You know, the boss, Buhaha, now I think the issue has been brought to the final conclusion. The committee which the minister set up to investigate the whole allegations level against the MD and the 5 million contaminated liters of fuel or petroleum products. I heard you saying that it's a new committee.
Yes, that's what I mentioned.
No, it isn't a new committee. It is the same committee with almost the same composition. But what has been added, right, or what is new, is the Dr.
Lawrence Dankwa.
Lawrence Dankwa, who is coming to head
or
to chair the committee. That is the only thing which is different. Even about the mandate or the sense of reference of the committee, it hasn't changed much. What has changed, I mean, the best of my knowledge, is that some of the issues that the committee was dealing with has been resolved. And that's, for me, they don't have to wait time on those issues anymore. On Friday, when we had our press conference, most of the issues were stated, and the facts were given. Some of the facts have been repeated by the minister. And for me, the committee mandate to do further investigation on some of those issues which have been dealt with by both NPA, the National Security, BNI, I mean, I should put to rest, especially about the allegation that the 5 million liters of contaminated product was out and it was being vended to motorists and it was destroying engines and all that. That one has put to rest. And again, about the formation of the company, I think that one has also put to rest.
But that then brings to question, what is there to be investigated?
Let me just give you the whole sequence of events, and you can pick the issues one by one. Right.
Right.
The issues about the price, what the allegation was that it is sold it at 1 cedi per liter, has also been put to rest. Because we said that BOS sold it to
Movimpina
at a cost of 1 cedi 30 pesos, and that investigation by the National Security, BNI, BOS, and the NPA has put that figure at the same rate that we reported. Okay, and there are other few issues which, for me, they are not of so much importance as you speak now. What is most important? I said the other time when me on your program,
yeah,
is that the constant or the consistent contamination of petroleum products. What can we do about this as a nation? And I think now the focus is shifted to that particular issue. Contamination in 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. What is the cause? What can we do to prevent it? I mean, we have to study, we have to take notes, do what is right, right? So, for me, if I can say what the minister today said at a press conference, after all the recommendations that he made, the committee is still have to work. And what we have to do is to further recommend appropriate action, whereby tomorrow you will not call the press again, or our friends from the minority will not come again and say that there's a contamination. And that is also what I feel as a nation we need. So the committee is to come out with, recommendations. Is it a personnel? Is it about training? What should we do so that those contaminations, you will not hear of those issues anymore in the future?
But if we're looking at measures to correct the ills in the institution, both I'm talking about, don't we have board at BOST and the management who can handle this instead of bringing an external committee?
I understand you. Unfortunately, I think now there's no board. But even if there's a board, if there's a personality like Dr. Lawrence Dankwa, who is a renowned chemical engineer, and he has excelled in that area, is to head a committee to make further recommendations in terms of reviewing the operation of BOST. I think that is not a bad thing to do as a nation. So my position now is, let us allow the committee to do the extra work. I would like to also take that when we made our press conference, we made some other categorical statements about the malfeasance, financial malfeasance at BOST, for which it is not within the mandate of the committee set by the minister. We will continue to push that there should be a full forensic audit of BOST activities, either from the inception of BOST or from 2009, so that there's no issue that we raise about the $39 million office conference, which is outrageous. Again, about the transfers that were made to the Baxter House. And again, about that contract of about $19 million, the pipeline from Accra Prince Depot to Akosombo. All these issues are still pending.
Okay.
And for me, we need to see how best you protect the taxpayers' money.
All right.
And but I think it's very important.
Listening to the minister, don't you see some question marks? Earlier, NPA had said that the company Movimpina involved hadn't been registered to do that. And the impression we got was that for the regulator to say that, it means the company should have done that. Today, the minister is telling us that there's nothing wrong with that.
No, the minister didn't say, and the NPA, and let me start from the NPA. The NPA didn't say that the company is not registered.
Licensed.
The NPA said that the company is not licensed.
Yes.
Yes. So, for the company registration, it has been dealt with. Right?
Yes. I mean, the licensing aspect is the issue.
Yes. The licensing issue, you see, in institutional practices, sometimes there are some conventions and practices that becomes like the norm. What has happening at BOST is that when there's anytime there's a contamination, the process to dispose of the contaminated product is what the current MD came to me. So it was like an institutional practice, and for which at that time the company was no land, and those that have been disposed of from 2014, those companies who came made those companies who came to make the request to buy the product, right, were not licensed. And the minister said more than 49 companies, some being individuals, some being union groups, some being companies that have been registered, but they have not been licensed by the National Petroleum Authority.
Okay.
So going forward, the minister, in his recommendation, said that henceforth, any time there's unfortunate contamination, what will happen is that the whole process will be put into open tender.
All right.
And again, those who will be eligible to tender in their application will have to be licensed by the National Petroleum Authority. And that is part of the recommendation that was made today by the minister. And
right.
I think this is the way forward, and this is how we should go about it.
We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful, sir.
Thank you so much,
my Acting brother. Chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Mines and Energy, Emmanuel Jemfi. He is also the Member of Parliament for Odotobri. It's Behind the News Live on Radio Ghana. Meanwhile, the minority caucus in Parliament has described as bizarre the exoneration of the Managing Director of Bost, Alfred Obin, I think, from the sale of contaminated fuel. The minority leader, Haruna Idrisu, addressing journalists in Parliament, asked the President, Nana Akufo-Addo, to allow the ministerial committee to go ahead with the investigation to unravel the truth about the subsequent sale of the product to Movimpina. Joining us on the line is a Member of Parliament for Bungu and a former communications specialist at the Ministry of Energy, Edward Bawa. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
And thanks for your time. Why is the minority describing the latest development at Bost as bizarre when two state institutions have come out with preliminary investigation exonerating the MD?
What are the two institutions?
NPA and BNI.
NPA came out exonerating them.
According to the minister, yes. They are preliminary investigations.
Why is it that the NPA, and then I'm making this, is it that the NPA statement that they issued, it was only the minister who could read and understand, and the rest of us can understand English? You see, I think that we need to take Ghanaians seriously. And for me, when I heard this thing, I just concluded on something. And actually in the morning, I had heard very clearly the move what they said. And that's why anybody who monitors me on my social media platform, that's on Facebook, I had granted that any morning because I had gotten my contacts to suggest that this was the instruction that was given to the ministry. And so, for me, the minister's statement was either due to duress or because he himself was going to connive in the government. Let me go to the details. The minister last week, in the wake of this challenge, had come out in advance to say that he was going to have an eight-member committee that had an institutional representation. In this particular institutional representation, BNI was included. MTA was part of it. Now, at what point did they indicate that they were doing this investigation, particularly at the time when they were one person as part of the committee that was being set up by the minister with specific terms of reference? If the BNI investigated, what was their terms of reference? Where is the report? And who did they talk to? This is something that we need. You get up and just come and say, BNI has made a report, and on the basis of the exoneration, let's go now to the exoneration. By the 20 years old statement that had issued, they had categorically stated that the companies being dealt with, either Movimpina or for that matter, Zup Oil, were both unlicensed companies that for BBC or for OMC.
Yeah.
This was a prima facie case. I was not the one who wrote the statement. It was perhaps a sampling. So at what point would that be a exoneration? When you are dealing with a company and by the NPA Act, they cannot deal with that. What do you mean by he's being exonerated? And when the man was linking on that letter that was written to NPA, he listened to Boss on the 2nd of June, he knew that that company was not a registered company. So on what exoneration are they talking about? Or I don't know what terms of reference, maybe they were giving terms of reference as to whether he contributed towards the party or not. And they say, yes, he contributed, so he was exonerated. But if it is about the kind that we're talking about, There was already a prima facie case that had been established on the basis of that. Let's put that one aside. The actual Amit is making, and he's consistently made that point. And I've always felt that journalism must, look, journalism, and for that, media houses must refuse to be conveyor belts. That when they give you information, the information goes to a general public. Important that you filter and know what is the truth. So, for example, if somebody is telling something that is a lie, but the person says it, then you challenge the person there. But not the person just speaks and goes away, and another person comes to speak, and the public is confused. Why do we say so? He indicates in his own statement, and he says that, now look, that this thing had happened in 2014, 2015, and 2016, and so the Dr. K, he's coming to chair, is coming to look and then look at and see how these confirmations have been happening. I challenge anybody to tell me whether 2014, 2015, 2016, there was a contamination. Actually, there was contamination at Bosch until this 18th January contamination. It was on the 24th of December 2013, when we had about 200,000 liters of petroleum product that were contaminated. Even with that, what the government did, or what Bosch did, was to change the product and sell it at market value. Did not go ahead to tell it. He then makes his companies that the minister says that companies have been operating in the downstream sector without. And I challenge the minister that he is lying, he is not telling Ghanaians the truth, and we must challenge him on that. And I'm going to tell you why. There's a difference between what we call slop and what is contaminated or off-spec that even Boss itself described.
The minister was categorical on that. He was talking of contaminated fuel.
Fuel. So that's the point I'm making. If you look at between 2014, 2015, 2016, it is going to happen in 2017, 2018. It's about the sale of slop. When the press conference, the majority organized their press conference, they indicated that there were a list of companies that were operating the downstream set of their license. It's a lie. The worst you can ever have is provisional license. And I'm going to tell you, usually when you have those slops that are sold, they are sold to operators. These dealers are not licensed companies. But the condition under which NPA works, is that if you want to come and deal in slop, if there's a product, if there's a slop that is supposed to be sold, a lot of companies come to bid for it. But before you bid for it, because you're not a licensed operator in the hydrocarbon downstream sector, what you do is that you go to NPA and get a certificate. Then you go to EPA, that's Environmental Protection Agency, and get a certificate before you can come and bid for it. Why do they go for it? They go for the certification because you're not a licensed operator in the downstream sector. And they want to trace where the slop finally ends up with. They might need to know who handles this slop. So that is what they do. So those companies that they listed and said they were companies who were buying contaminated products and they were unlicensed. It's just companies that were dealing in slop and they don't get licensed. They are only dealing certificates. So when the minister makes that statement, a certain officer over the sector, what you have just said is that you're condoning wrongdoing. And that is one of the areas that we also have challenges with. But last but not least, and I'm going to make this point very well. You remember, the moment that this committee was set up, and then you had serious party officials threatening the president and telling the president that if he goes ahead and starts of being watching, after of being watching, I want to ensure that they look at how the NPP won the election in this city. And he goes further to say that this was a man who contributed handsomely towards the victory of the party in terms of physical cash. And that nobody should dare touch him. He's touching the government on the basis of this. Then suddenly today, we have a minister and the press coming to stand and face the cameras and tell us that there was this fictitious, and I call it fictitious BNI report. And on that basis of that report, the man has been. When NPA has stated that there were certain things.
You called a BNI report fictitious. You came out with your news conference and you told the whole world that one Movimpina was owned by Mr. Alfred Obin. This latest report from BNI says that is not true. Now, you talked of the address. This report says that is not true.
Let me tell you, George.
Yes.
The media houses, take your time and look at it. Take a copy of our report. We indicated very clearly that Movimpina, when we went to this place, when we went to and check. We realized that Movimpina was registered under the name Nana Poko Ajeman, who is a close associate of the current before he was appointed. What we did see was that on the letterhead, the number that was on it was traceable to his private office in airport and central area. That was what we said. So if the minister comes to tell you that the train was not registered under Obin Buatu, who said he was registered under Obin Buatu?
Right.
The train was registered under Nanakoko Jemai. However, the number on the letterhead was traceable to Obin Buatu's private office at airport residential area. Why didn't you address that issue?
All right. I want to thank you. Thank you very much for your time on our show. It is NDC NPP as usual. Member of Parliament for Bongo, Edward Bauer, and he is a former communications specialist at the Ministry of Energy. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the Executive Director of the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers Ghana, COPEC, Duncan Amoah. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News. Hello.
Good evening to your listeners.
Nothing untoward was done in the sale of the 5 million liters of contaminated fuel. So what is your take on the outcome of the preliminary investigations so far into the issue?
I think the minister has concluded his committee's investigations already, even before the committee would have its first sitting. Contrary to what the public expected to find out, it looks as though what is of interest to the ministry and section of the public that see nothing wrong with what has been done is what the ministry has communicated today. And for those of us on the other side or the periphery, it hasn't been a very good day for the other CSOs that I've had some discussions with. People were really expecting that Ghana would, for one, not shield corruption, not shield criminality, would not shield wrongdoing. Unfortunately, it looks as though that is not our interest. That is not what we are seeking to find answers to. And so if you look at what the minister says, the focus of this committee now is going to be shifted towards finding out how contaminated products come to be and how to prevent that in the coming future and all of that.
It has been our collective call for state institutions to be proactive. And in this case, the minister was quoting state institutions and, for that matter, BNI and NPA. They have said what the minister was saying.
The NPA has indicted both severally and variously. I mean, the NPA in its preliminary report, I'm sure if you ask the NPA to write the same report it wrote a week ago, it would alter it, because there seems to be this class agenda to now shelve whatever has gone down and whatever seemed not to have gone right. There seemed to be that, if you look at the body languages of the state actors so far involved, you get the feeling that, oh, indeed, this is nothing new. We have sold contaminated products in the past. But if I heard your earlier interviewee correctly, there is not the history of contaminated products being dumped onto the Ghanaian market, talk less of millions of liters as we found in this instance. Unfortunately, what this class defense act is suggesting to all of us is that from hence, whatever is done at BOSS, whatever Tor does, whatever any of these state agencies done, they will investigate themselves. And so you guys shouldn't even bother your head. They will investigate themselves. I have indicated again that if you are looking for investigations in the country, indeed, the police CID also, investigates crime. Would it have been proper if the CID had jumped into this matter, had made their own conclusion, had gone to effect arrest when they had not been asked to do so? I wonder who commissioned this BNI investigation when we all knew that the BNR of an institution was duly represented on the earlier committee that the ministry had set up, which we all believed were going to do an impartial job, a thorough job, and a proper job. If you look at some interested bodies like the Association of Oil Marketing Companies, who are badly affected by some of these issues, one knew and expected that their inclusion in there was going to ensure that some of the negative practices, such as just dumping 5 million contaminated products onto the open market, was going to be a thing of the past. But if you look at what the ministry is telling Ghanaians today, it doesn't look the committee at the ministry level is any longer useful. For this, COPEC is suggesting to the president that he establishes an independent commission of inquiry. If we need to get into Ghana's downstream insider trading activities, the things that goes on wrongly, the things that are not supposed to be done are being done, it is shield officials who find themselves at the wrong side of the law, but for whom, because political game or the other, will be shielded by the system. We are proposing this committee should not even waste the taxpayers' money any further, because right from the onset, it looks the remit or what the boundaries of their investigation is in a way dictated to by the minister, who sees no wrong at all with whatever transaction that transpired between both Movenpina and Zup Oil.
All right.
When MPA, an agency under the ministry, had earlier indicted both for transacting illegally with companies that had no substance at all to handle petroleum products.
The thing
is that some people have been sold products in the past. If it was wrong in the past, it should be wrong today.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful. Duncan Amoah is Executive Director of Chamber of Petroleum Consumers Ghana, COPEC. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. 0266-026-941. To our next story. The death of 17 people in their pursuit for gold at Prestia in the Western region has raised major questions about the government promise and preparedness to end illegal mining, also known as galamsey, in the country. According to reports, 14 out of 19 small-scale miners were trapped in a pit on Sunday around 5:30 p.m., resulting in this unfortunate incident. The occurrence of this incident comes as a major setback to the government quest to eradicate illegal mining in the country. So what does this development mean for us all in this quest to end illegal mining? Joining us on the line is Deputy Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, Benito Usubio. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
What is the very latest on this unfortunate development?
Okay, as we speak now, we've been able to retrieve one body out of the 17. So we can say that the 16 of them who are unaccounted for. And as we speak, we are still on it, working previously throughout the night to make sure that we retrieve them alive or we retrieve their bodies.
What does this development mean for the quest to end illegal mining?
If you ask me, I would say that this means that, yes, there are still some pockets of illegal miners who are so recalcitrant that they are not heeding to the call by all of us, all Ghanaians, the call that we are telling them, sending to them to stop these illegal activities. Yes, I would say that it's interesting. And now those who are still in it, especially those who are mining the bedrock, as is the case in Prestia, where this incident happened.
When you say bedrock, what does that mean?
Yes, so let me explain it to you. You know, those who use the excavators,
yeah,
as we have been complaining, those who are digging the land, those who are on the stream, they are mining what we call open cast mining. And they are mainly mining alluvia. And with alluvia, it's not about rock. You know, the rock which is known as the bedrock, that is where the gold ore is. And with years and with centuries, sometimes it washes with rain and with rivers, and then they come out as fine quartz veins, and it becomes alluvial. So some of them are able to trace and locate where these rocks are. The rocks mainly are underground. Obuasi mine, as we all used to know, the shaft system that they were mining the bedrock. Likewise, the Prestia underground here.
Should we be so looking at...
People are mining with the shaft system, and they are mining, what they do is they dig pits, a round pit, with a diameter of roughly around 2 meters or 1.5 meters, and they can go down as deep as more than over 100 meters till they locate the rock.
Wow.
And when they locate the rock, they do blast it with dynamite.
Oh, okay.
What happened in this situation was that there was somebody there doing the blasting whilst there were others there also mining at the same time. So they threw away all the safety regulations, the safety rules and everything. And they don't care. And this is what it leads to, leading to death. So what is happening is not what we all know. And it's just some small section of them who mine in this way.
Oh, okay.
These are the ones mainly who are still doing the mining. They are doing it in jungles, and it's difficult for you to even locate them.
Should we be worried too much about these? Because from what you have narrated, it appears the activities will not or may not be polluting water bodies as we are worried.
Yes, they are not polluting water bodies. But you see the results of this. They are dying. And even the life of one of them is so important and more precious than gold.
Will you suggest that we change the strategy?
No, we are not going to change the strategy. So far, I would say, so far, so good. Because on my way from Kumasi to Prestia, I never saw any excavator working along the road. All of them have been packed, and they've grouped them, ready to move them out.
Okay.
So it means that our core is working. But then, there are still some few recalcitrant ones. What we need to do is to move into the second phase. That is the plan B, where we will allow the military to come in with their task force and to make sure that they flush out the people who are left and who are recalcitrant and will still want to mine illegally.
But how does it feel as a deputy minister on the ground seriously working hard to end this, and you hear that this is happening in your constituency?
This is not my constituency anyway.
Oh, okay.
This is the constituency of my other colleague who happens to be in Germany now, attending a conference representing Ghana. So I came here as also as a deputy minister to ensure that no matter what, we are either able to save some lives or retrieve their body. So far, we've had a lot of cooperation. The major mining companies, which is the Golden Star Resources, they have backed us up with their safety and then also rescue team. The NADMO is with us. The police are with us. The district assembly. And also a lot of well-wishers. Even including the Galamseyers themselves. Because, you know, these pits are not engineered. They just dig them. There are no maps on them. And even the structural integrity of the pits are unknown. So it is even difficult for even experts to enter. Unless you rely on these same Galamseyers. So, yes, we are working with them. And they are the ones who are helping to retrieve the body.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful. Benito Usubio is Deputy Minister for Lands and Natural resources. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the Managing Director of Graphic Communications Group Limited and convener of the Media Coalition Against Illegal Mining. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News, Mr. Ken Asikbi.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well, and thanks for your time. How did last week's exercise go?
Well, the town hall meeting at Masson Kwanta went very, very well. We had in excess of 200 stakeholders gather at the district, the Amantia West District Assembly, made up of small-scale miners, made up of chiefs, made up of key stakeholders within the community. School children were also invited. We also had duty bearers like the police, the immigration. We had the Minerals Commission. We also had members of the steering committee. And then critically, there were the NCC who did the on-the-ground mobilization of the people for us. Then we had the CSIR speak, Dr. Dia from the CSIR speak on the impact of Galamsey on the environment and the water body. Then we have Mr. Yamaya from the Association of Impact Assessors. He also came to speak about the impact of Galamsey on the people themselves. They had done some work on the toxicity of some of these mining sites, and he had data to share on what was happening in the Amantia West District. And it was the same for Dr. Dia from the Water Research Institute, also had information about some of the pollution and the things that had happened within the Amantia area. So had done a lot of work within these communities. And when it was shared with the people, they themselves saw that the damage that they were doing to themselves. The interactions were very, very fruitful.
After a fruitful exercise that we all expected that we should be moving forward, we're hearing that some illegal miners have been trapped. Some are feared dead. What does that mean to this fight?
Well, it just tells us that what we fear has come to us. If you recall, the LPM said, the announcement that we had promoting the Red Friday was calling on Ghanaians to realize that we should not be deceived that Galamsey was still with us. That in as much as we have the moratorium and we have most of the excavators parked, the illegal miners had changed their modus operandi and were going at night. They were going into places that were obscure, that was difficult to see. But once they do these things at night, what then happens is that their safety itself is compromised. And for us as a media coalition, what we have been fighting, and it's about the lives of Ghanaians, is this, reckless, destruction of the lives of people. Be that they themselves are the illegal miners, they are still Ghanaians. And our cry is first and foremost to ensure that we protect every life. Nobody deserves to be stuck in a mine like this. If we have, God has blessed us with resources, we should mine them responsibly in such a way that, first and foremost, the people who are here today, their lives should be preserved. The environment should be preserved. Tomorrow's children should also come and benefit from it. So this is the cry that, as Media Coalition, this is what we have been crying about. And it even says that the urgency of the fight has been moved to another crescendo. And for me, this thing that has happened, there are some faceless and Ghanaians, big Ghanaians, influential Ghanaians, who are not in the pit. They would not die like this. They are sitting in their homes right now. And for me and you, as media people, we need to do some investigative journalism. We need to do some forensic investigation to be able to expose people like this who have the blood of these 14 or so miners on their hands.
It's going to be a difficult battle, I guess.
Yes, well, it's going to be a difficult battle. But I think that at this stage that we are in, the president has assured us that they have a plan. And we know the plan has various facets. One of the basic ones that we are doing is this thing of the advocacy. The second bit is the law enforcement one. And we are waiting for the president to just get the security force, the task forces, who are supposed to be on the ground for a year. I think that this 14 people who are stuck in this pit, it tells the president that it is time for him to let the security forces come on the ground so that the recalcitrant ones who are still mining at night, the recalcitrant ones who are hiding in this pit, you know, and at the risk of their own lives, the recalcitrant ones who are still sitting in Sishuamanyo on the Bear River, that if you drive in there, you have to walk another 5 miles before you get there. We need choppers, you know, the Air Force and all of that to join in this particular fight. So our call as the media coalition to the president is that he needs to act now. We know that the plan is in the offing. He needs to call the security forces onto the ground. And then we are also calling on all Ghanaians that it is the life of the very people that are at risk. It is not just that. So when we talk about what? They talk that we are denying people alternative livelihood. Is the price of anybody, the price of the life of anybody worth any alternative livelihood? It's important that we put a stop to this at once. And I'm calling on all of us as media that we need to intensify this campaign to make sure that the president sends the task force in, and then we can put a stop to this to protect the lives of every Ghanaian and any person who is living in Ghana.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. You are very grateful, sir.
Thank you very much.
Managing Director of Graphic Communications Group Limited and convener of the Media Coalition Against Galamsey Campaign, Ken Ashige. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. The chief of Nsota Mbiase, Nana Edupenin, had agreed to speak to us on this issue, but as we talk, his line is off. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Moving on to our next story. Meanwhile, keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. The government, through the Ghana Revenue Authority, on Saturday, July 1, began the implementation of the 3% flat rate value-added tax, the rate which is meant to replace the old VAT law, which mandated manufacturers and service providers to charge 17.5% VAT on behalf of the state. Barely a week after the implementation of the law, some manufacturers have begun expressing a possible increase in cost of production through the introduction of the new VAT, despite insistence by government that the 3% VAT flat rate will not result in price increases. So what does this flat rate mean to us? Joining us on the line is Deputy Minister for Information, a Member of Parliament for Ofuasia UAB, Kwejo Opon Nkrumah. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
George, good evening. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. Thanks for your time. What does this 3% flat rate of VAT mean to us?
Well, essentially it means that we have a simpler approach to calculating our VAT. You would recall that previously VAT was calculated first on value added, but secondly computed as a net between the output VAT and the input VAT. And then you have to file your returns before you pay. Now, there are difficulties for many potential VAT compliant persons when it comes to the processing of the necessary documents and the computations. And so, after a deep study showed that the real marginal rate between the 17.5 output input, looking at the generality of industries, was...
Hello? It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We've lost Kwejo on the line. We shall try and reestablish contact with him to... Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, some of your text messages. Matthias Tulesin, who says, George, the boss MD, exoneration by BNI, is a pure cover-up, deceitful, bogus, and a big disgrace. Abdullah Elias, minister in Zantani, Tolon District, says, the minority in parliament should always check their facts before bringing it to the public domain. May Allah grant President Nana Akufo-Addo and Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, the Vice President's strength to rule the country smoothly. AU Farouk in Tamale says, NPP government cannot divert our minds and attention from their dubious causing financial loss to the state at best. Ghanaians are now seeing the wrongdoings in the Nanado Bawumia government. No wonder the boss MD has been cleared of no wrongdoing. That's AU Farouk in Tamale. We are join on the line back. I could do upon Nkrumah. Yes, welcome back.
Thank you. Like I was saying, at first you have to do a 17.5% output, 17.5% input and net off. Now we have simplified the process in which all you have to do is to pay 3% flat on your sales or your turnover. And no, it doesn't apply to manufacturers. It applies to wholesalers and retailers of goods, excluding thermal and other related goods. And it also doesn't apply to services. It's only a simpler approach to calculation.
Being simpler approach, and then we here in 17.5 and now 3, what does the state stand to benefit?
Well, by virtue of the fact that it's a simpler approach, and therefore the temptation to avoid tax is lower, the state hopes to have effectively broadened the tax base just by doing this, so that now the incentive to have avoided is eliminated. There's greater, or there's expected to be greater compliance. And even with the greater compliance rate, the state now expects to rake in a bit more without necessarily taxing the people more.
Some manufacturers are expressing the fear that this will lead to increases in some product.
Those fears will be unfounded because it doesn't apply to manufacturers.
So what about the consumer? So we are not going to pay more, we are not going to pay less?
So if a manufacturer expresses worry that it could lead to an increase in his or her prices, it is unfounded because it doesn't apply to manufacturers. It only applies to wholesalers and retailers. And no, we don't expect it to translate into an increase in prices if the computation is done properly. The reason is that it is the marginal difference between the 17.5% output input, which we are still taxing. So it doesn't go above what we were taxing. It was still the same thing. Indeed, if you do the calculations well, there are some cases in which the prices actually come down. Today, we've done a number of price scenarios on radio and other platforms in which some of the prices and the tax rates actually come down. So I think those fears are being expressed because some category of persons don't have, the full understanding. And that's to be expected whenever you're introducing something like this. The important thing will be for us to continuously engage and educate, provide the guidance so that for those who still have difficulty, they are assisted in doing the computation, and they realize the benefits to all of us. While at that, let me mention that the Ghana Revenue Authority, through its offices across the country, has officers on standby who will assist anybody who has difficulty. So I kindly entreat your listeners who still have difficulty. There are many groups that are comfortable currently. Some still have difficulties. I kindly entreat your listeners who have difficulties to visit the offices of the GRA and get some assistance in the new computation.
All right. Kodjo, I want to thank you very much for the education this evening. We are very grateful.
Thank you, George.
Deputy Minister of Information, Kodjo Opon Nkrumah, is also the Member of Parliament for Ofumasi, UAB. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the Public Relations Officer of Guta, Joseph Adi. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Hello, good evening to your cherished listeners.
3% flat rate as against 17.5. What does that mean to you?
What that means to businessmen and business communities is the good news. Once you have been taxed 17.5 and then there's a reduced to 3%, it's a welcome news. But in any case, it was something we have been advocating for some time, that one of the elements, cost of doing business in the country is high, and because of some of the tax components. So when we made this proposal, our government bought into the idea, and then they brought it to 3%, which is simplified for all of us to use as a worker-friendly tax regime and tax system. Which, and even my grandmother, who didn't have no business school, can easily calculate it. In any case, when this announcement was made, I was hearing all kinds of agitations, and then people were trying to read meaning into bring their own definition to ask what happened. But the whole idea is that what we're trying to achieve is saying that government should widen the tax net so that it can bring a lot of people on board. And in doing that, realize that this input-output was a challenge to business community. So what can we do? to bring them on board. So let's simplify the tax system so that everybody can be on board. And we all agreed and we realized that in between the input output, there is a percentage wider, that's about 5%. So we were even agitating to pay 2%, and then we came to a compromise. And then you can't always have your way when you are going for negotiation. So we agreed on 3%, which the government also agreed, and then we have been implemented. So it's a welcome news. And people were saying it's going to add up. I don't think so. Where we stand, I don't think it's going to add to the cost of things. It's rather, it's going to bring some relief to businessmen and businesswomen in Ghana and Denmark. So it's a welcome news.
Welcome news, and the expectation from all of us that more people will be roped in. What would be your role in that exercise?
Yeah, so what we told GRA is that it's not enough just introducing this simplified tax system, but what they have to take a step further and make sure they register all our members. We're going to help them to make sure they register all our members. What is going to happen now is if more or less divide.
Okay.
So if you have 30 people who are paying tax and they are giving you 5,000, and now you can get 300 people who can give you 10,000, I will go for those 300 people who give me 10,000. So what we told GRA that as where we stand as GUTA executive and GUTA members, we will talk to our members so that all of them come on board. And the first regime, the standardized one, what we realized was that some are registered, some are not registered. So those who are registered, they end up not even taking the VAT, even issuing the VAT receipt, because consumers were not going to them, but their prices were high.
All right.
Those who were not registered were rather gaining. So we think that the case to create parity, let everybody be registered.
All right. Joseph.
When we are registered, then everybody will be on an equal playing field because we are all doing the same business, selling the same item.
Joseph, I want to thank you very much for your time. We are very grateful.
Thank you.
Joseph Addis is the public relations officer of GUTA. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the head of the Department of Finance, the University of Cape Coast Business School, Dr. John Gatti. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
What is a flat VAT rate?
Well, a flat VAT rate is just a rate that does not follow the normal workings of VAT in terms of the input-output approach to computing VAT.
Well, so,
normally, the purpose of the flat rate is just a special dispensation that is given to a certain section of the trading public who find it difficult to engage in the computation, and their turnover is not like the other large traders. And it has also been found that most of these people are finding it difficult to pay. It's just like an incentive for them to register and pay the VAT and contribute to tax revenue. So basically, it's a special dispensation that is given to people to incentivize them to also contribute to the revenue basket.
Looking at our current structure, the 17.5 input-output system that is being replaced with a 3% VAT, how will the states benefit?
Well, I think the states need to open up to all of us to indicate the kind of computation they have done and to see which one is going to provide more revenue or not. As I said earlier, this is not the first time we are introducing flat rate. I think during the period of the late Baru, we introduced the flat rate purposely because we want to engage some sections of the trading population to be registered for VAT and pay a convenient rate. But the same people who promoted that idea along the line, they realized that most of their members were not registering. And in addition to that, they also realized that those of them who are paying that flat rate have realized that they were rather paying more than what they were to pay under the normal VAT regime. And the same people agitated, and I think there was a distortion of the same program. So if you introduce flat rate, a majority of the people are not registered for the tax. You don't know how you are going to incentivize them to register and pay the tax, because normally, if you are not registered for VAT, you cannot pay VAT. So that is the first thing that I believe that the government ought to engage in. Even though we have been working very hard within the revenue reform program, it is true that taxes are not paid voluntarily, even though we believe that we can do certain things to make people pay taxes voluntarily.
Okay.
So I think that is the difficulty that may awaken us one day and make us back to the normal behavior.
Doc, we are very grateful for your time on our show tonight. Dr. John Gatti is the head of the Department of Finance, University of Cape Coast Business School. Some of your text messages. Bravo to the Honorable Minister of Roads and Highway for enforcing law and order on our roads. Let us all support him for the betterment of all. Odewale sent in this. George, do you see how Galamsey people are dying? I believe God himself has taken the revenge against them. Achufuga in Tabora sent in that one. Justice Malimbu of Glang says Chile was able to send down TV and oxygen for their trapped miners. They finally rescued them all. Why can't same be done in Ghana to save lives? Oh, Ghanaians, you talk too much and you do little. The setting up of the committee concerning the petroleum brouhaha is the best way to curbing corruption in our energy or petroleum sector, as well as other sectors of our economy. I call to Honorable Emmanuel Boache Jakun. Amadou Omar, a number from Mankarigo, sent in that the managing director of BOS is a clean man, and that is why President Nanado and the NPP government can never be corrupted. Jake Ernest Ayer sent in this from Kaliul. George, our problem of late is that demons are more than saints in the Ghanaian institution. Joshua in Yamanye Yeji sent in that one. Razak Bulung Kumbungu district says, rest in peace to all souls. But Galamsey must be stopped under President Nanado's government. I thank the minority NDC in parliament for the good work they are doing, especially the minority leader Haruna Idrisu and his deputy James Kuchi Aveji. Napoleon in Tumu Sankofa Bay sent in that. Once again, Dev has laid his icy hands on the people of Motigu, a village in the Wild West district, through the carved mining pit at Nsota. Peter Amewu, please don't fail Ghanaians from Glang in the Wild East district of the Upper West region. Justice Malimbu. And that is all we have for tonight's edition of Behind the News. My producers were Asibi Bangu, Ikela Set, Eya, John Pobi, Belland, Elom, Tete, Suwel, Nana Majikum, and Philip Boateng. Our sound engineer was Hannah Owusu Bempa, and my name is George Asikrit. We meet again, God willing, same time tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of our programs.